Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hello, we'd like to welcome you to another episode of TMT Talk, Baker McKenzie's global TMT industry podcast. In this episode, we will be discussing trade sanctions and export controls as geopolitical tools. I'm Anne Pettit, a partner based in Sydney. My areas of expertise include advising on cross-border supply chain and trade issues, particularly for businesses in the TMT sector. I'm very pleased to be joined by Frank Pan and Alison Stafford Powell. Frank is a partner based in Shanghai who specialises in international trade, export control, supply chain trade remedies, and custom audits and investigations. Alison is a partner in our Palo Alto office who advises companies on reconciling US and other countries' export controls and sanctions, including under the US Export Administration regulations and the OFAC sanctions in order to solve operational issues and respond to enforcement inquiries. So let's dive into our session. Alison, I'm going to come to you first. And as you know, we're seeing sanctions used as a tool to tackle geopolitical events. The most obvious example of that in recent times has been the sanctions issued by many countries in response to the war in Ukraine. And how has that sort of activity been impacting TMT companies? And more importantly, perhaps looking forward, what are some of the lessons learned to prepare for next time?
Thanks, Anne, and thanks for having us. Yes, so the disruptive impact of geopolitics on business operations has been, it's been bubbling up a while now through the pandemic, the associated supply chain issues, Brexit, the tariff wars, rising tensions between the US and China, and as you just said, the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the fallout from that. And the TMT sector has really been in the crosshairs, and I think it's important that we understand the types of restrictions that can bite and have bitten this sector. And just to highlight three of those, I think first off, there's much, much heavier scrutiny over certain types of technologies, both, you know, crown jewel type technologies, as well as more sensitive technologies that can be used to power military campaigns, such as in Russia. Obvious focus, semiconductors, which are in practically anything these days, but also the manufacturing tools and associated materials and technologies that go into that. Supercomputers, quantum computing, and AI are the other sort of big focus areas. And these are really national security priorities, so staying ahead is not enough. The goal is to degrade perceived opponents. And we saw that last October with the US rules on semiconductors, very much focused on the capabilities of the recipient fab. So even if you're sending them fairly benign parts. And right now we're waiting for additional guidance and the next shoe to drop on those rules. I think the second area is how technologies are put to use. So we're seeing more end-use type controls. So how benign technologies that can otherwise be used for nefarious purposes, such as for dissemination of fake news, cyber surveillance, collection of personal data, etc. Just seen in the past week, various efforts to ban popular social media platforms again and app-related apps on government devices and networks in various countries. And then the third area, I think, is investment in technology. There's a lot of scrutiny over where is the investment money going. We're seeing a rise in foreign investment controls in the US. We're also waiting for the outbound investment review regime, which is very much focused on cutting-edge technologies being funded by US dollars. And then if we think about, you know, the Russia experience, I think that's also highlighted the practical impact of trade controls and how that has changed in recent years, particularly in the TMT sector. Because the way in which we access and use technologies has become much more complex, which means that we've seen a much bigger impact when these restrictions come down. So there's been a gradual shift from on-premise to cloud-based and SaaS technologies. Many solutions are now a mix of both and coming from all sorts of different jurisdictions. Many of the solutions are under complex umbrella contracts, licenses, which makes it quite difficult to map out, to figure out who's got what, where are the updates coming from, who has access to what, etc. And that complex deployment structure has made it very difficult to disentangle. Do you need to novate all or part of a license? Will there be a transfer of technology through that? Is your vendor going to cooperate? Do you have any local alternative options? How do you ensure there's no unauthorized indirect access if you need to cut off services? And SaaS is a particularly thorny topic because we've seen a lot of concerns recently over Russian companies switching to SaaS to get the same benefits or as on-prem solutions that they can no longer access. And there are quite different views as to whether SaaS involves an export or it's more about the related service. Then on the enforcement front, we're seeing a lot of cross-border investigations into the diversion of sensitive technologies, for example, parts that go into drones, etc. And for those in the cloud and SaaS space, there is an awful lot more attention, many cases now, and scrutiny over the adequacy of geo-blocking measures and screening who has access and from where. I think in terms of lessons learned, there are many, but I can't emphasize enough the need for cross-functional contingency planning and risk mapping. Do your tabletops. Companies do those in the cyberspace to prepare for those types of attacks. Same here. And also get the board engaged. They are best placed to look at the macro picture and understand some of the early warning indicators and policy drivers, which, you know, I think caught a lot of folks off guard in the Russia instance. So with that sort of context, perhaps I can turn to Frank now. So Frank, what are TMT companies doing to comply with sanctions and export controls? And how are they bolstering their resilience, the supply chain resilience? And what types of questions are we being asked by TMT companies?
Thanks, Allison. One of the biggest challenges in implementing the more recent sanctions and export controls relates to the due diligence efforts to collect key factual information regarding your trade partners in order to decide whether the transactions can move forward. In this regard, we see many companies enhancing their due diligence procedures, as well as the questionnaires or certifications that they require their trade partners to sign in response to the extremely complex regulatory requirements. Some of them may even go so far as to suspend the more risky businesses while the compliance teams are working diligently to figure out the level of compliance risks involved and the appropriate path forward. Another dimension of complexity is the local sensitivities, especially in the countries where there are blocking rules or retaliatory measures that specifically aim to frustrate the efforts to comply with the US-EU sanctions and export controls. For that reason, TMT companies have to be very careful in the communications with their local trade partners to avoid unnecessary backlash. So they also need to develop protocols to protect their local employees who are directly involved in the trade compliance efforts, as some of the local countermeasures may expose these employees to liabilities, especially in the data security areas, if the communication with their overseas counterparts breaches the data security laws. To bolster the resilience of supply chains in this context, we see many TMT companies proactively revisiting their contractual terms with their trade partners in the sensitive countries to ensure that sufficient protection is built in case a termination becomes necessary. Some of them are also actively monitoring their potential supply chain vulnerabilities to better anticipate and prepare for potential disruptions. Some vulnerabilities involve not just new sanctions and export controls, but also non-tariff barriers in the countries at the receiving end of the sanctions measures, which are often adopted as retaliatory measures, such as product regulatory requirements, market entry barriers, ad hoc trade coercive measures, or even selective enforcement actions. How can we foresee these supply chain risks as they are coming and buy more time to mitigate them? These are the questions often asked by TMT companies. Supply chain diversification is another focus of many TMT companies. While a complete relocation of manufacturing from countries like China to another Asian jurisdiction cannot happen overnight, we see many companies are evaluating alternative structures, such as dual sourcing, in which China plus one backup Asian country are simultaneously used as manufacturing hubs to mitigate the disruptive impact that may be caused by the next geopolitical crisis. So these are the observations of what TMT companies are doing. With that said, I will hand this over to Anne to talk about the practical tips we can provide for TMT companies for their strategic contingency planning. Over to you, Anne.
Thanks very much, Frank. I think a really important practical thing to remember here is to firstly look at what actions and changes you can make to your business to de-risk your exposure that suits you. So nearshoring is one example that we've seen several businesses deploy. And so, for example, nearshoring might happen where, you know, a business might be supplying complex technical products. Their customers need quite a lot of support for those products. And so we've seen several businesses, you know, relocating some of their business to be closer to their customers in order to provide that support. And in doing so, they address some of their supply chain disruption risk. And look, a side effect of that has also been increased movement of people to be closer to those customers. But nearshoring is not going to be the solution for everything and will not suit all businesses. So again, really important to look at, well, what de-risking solutions will suit you? And I think that leads me into my sort of next practical tip in strategic contingency planning is to ask the hard questions of your business. Ask lots of questions to try and work out what are the business's real options for dealing with their geopolitical risks. So, you know, firstly, really focus on assessing what aspects of your business are at risk of being impacted by geopolitical activities. That might mean, you know, assessing what parts of your at-risk supply chain have components that are easily substitutable, as opposed that aren't really substitutable. And look for components that are not easily substitutable, then assess your options. You know, does that mean you need to keep more spares for those products on hand? Do you actually need to reassess the substitution options? Certainly seeing this about clients saying, well, it's not really substitutable, and saying, well, we actually need it to be substitutable. How do we reassess that? And then, you know, if the items aren't really substitutable at the supply end, then think about, well, is this something I can manage further in my terms that I agree with my customers, and building in more flexibility to your supply chains with customers? And it's also to sort of think ahead and really focus on diversification. You know, where can the business diversify in terms of suppliers, logistics, other service providers and customers, say in the next 3, 5, 10 years? And as part of that, you do need to weigh up all relevant issues, such as, you know, if I'm looking to move some of my manufacturing facility to another jurisdiction, what's that jurisdiction like on regulation of ESG issues? You know, how easy is it to do business in a new jurisdiction? And these are all supply chain issues and due diligence issues that, you know, businesses have faced for many years. So again, you know, there are tried and tested established ways of dealing with these issues. So let me just conclude by wrapping up a few things that we've talked about today. We would like to encourage people to apply a broad meaning to what are geopolitical measures that could disrupt a supply chain. It might not be a new sanction that directly regulates the business that impacts the most. It might be something more indirect. So it might, for example, be a product shortage or a shipping disruption that's a consequence of geopolitical tensions. So really important to think broadly about where you're going to be impacted by these geopolitical tensions. And as I've said before, supply chain disruption issues, they're not new. And many businesses will already have, you know, great learnings from their COVID supply chain disruption experience that they can build on in developing risk management techniques for responding to the impact of geopolitical tensions. So, you know, many businesses have done lots of good work already on how they deal with these issues. So that's all from us. I'd like to thank in particular Alison and Frank for joining us and sharing their thoughts. And thank you for listening to us on this edition of TMT Talk. Goodbye.